Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave. Dave and I have been communicating lately, and he brings good news from Philadelphia. It's always nice to know that Philly has some good news going on. Oh, I miss my hometown so much sometimes, but here we are happily in Baltimore for our last two-hour show, Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and I'll tell you why, and that's pretty exciting, too. Starting in February, and I guess, what, Tuesday is going to be the first day of February? Whatever the next show is going to be, it's going to be 3 hours, okay? And then it'll be 3 hours from then on in. It's going to be a really cool show today because I have to pay homage to a few people who have been very important in my life, and their birthdays are either today or tomorrow at the time of recording. Then we have the wonderful Darius Scott, who's going to be joining us next hour. Oh, my gosh. First time I heard this man, I went, he is very imposing in a few different ways, and you just do not know how imposing he is. Found out a few things that are surprising in a great way about Darius. Great keyboard player, like the one that you're hearing right now, Dawood Saeed. That's our little theme music. Let's see. Oh, yes, we also have a special song for my Cool Jazz Conversations show partner, Joy Hall's grandmother. She had been hospitalized. She's out. She's recuperating. We have a song for her. But right now, let's start the show with something that I think will tickle your fancy. I think we need to hear some Miles Davis, don't you? On Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Really glad you're there today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some different kinds of moods on this show today. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy and Maxine Sullivan. And I have to credit Terrence Blanchard for the inspiration for Maxine today, and I'll tell you why. First of all, a little background. Born in Homestead, Pennsylvania, active for 50 years in the business from the mid-30s to right before she passed in 1987. Started out, I think this is hilarious, in her uncle's band, and the band was called the Red Hot Peppers, not the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but the Red Hot Peppers. I just think that is such velvet fluidity when she sings. Mercy. She was known best for her interpretation of a Scottish folk song called Loch Lomond, done in swing style. And she picked up the torch, sort of, knowing that she was so popular for that. She did a number of folk songs done in a jazz style. And I guess that Terrence Blanchard, something resonated with this lady so much that he included her on the Red Tails soundtrack. So, man, the soundtrack is so hot, I can't even say, because Terrence Blanchard has become just so bloody creative, always was, but now he's just, if you will, spreading his wings and flying. The movie was outstanding. The soundtrack is great. Do yourself a favor, go see the movie first and then pick up the soundtrack, because if you see some song titles, it will give away some of what happens in the film. Just can't say enough about the film or Maxine Sullivan, because I really didn't know a whole lot about her. So thank you, Terrence. Wallace Roney, we heard from his CD, If Only for One Night. And that was I Love What We Make Together. Oh. WallaceRoney.com has more information. Now, you remember, folks who have been diehard fans of this show, and God bless you for it, at one point, Wallace Roney was a no-show one day. got that straightened out. I was mad at him for a minute. But let me tell you something. I love this man so much. I am just so blessed that he spent as much time as he did when we finally got together on the air. And I'm so glad that he told his assistant, Dawn, that it was one of the coolest times he ever had. And this is, you know, as you know, no small potatoes, because his mentor, of course, Miles Davis. And it's really interesting. If you go to Wallace's website, you'll see a video from back in the day. Oh, my gosh. When Charles Kuralt was the host of CBS Sunday Morning, he had Dr. Billy Taylor on, and Billy had an interview with Wallace Roney. You have to catch that and get what kind of spirit, person, and talent this man has. Of course, it was evidenced in that tune. Wallace just finished up at the Iridium Jazz Club in New York, and now it looks like he's going to be every Wednesday in January and February at the Dominion. If you have a chance, go catch him. You might see Antoine Roney with him, or Aureal Ortiz, or Rashawn Carter, or Kush Abade, some of the folks that were on the CD with him. Miles Davis, to start things out. Lord have mercy. I Fall in Love Too Easily, which you can get from Beautiful Ballads and Love Songs, but if you can get a hold of Seven Steps to Heaven from 1963, do that. Recorded in two locations. Personnel on the album included George Coleman, tenor sax, Herbie Hancock, and Victor Feldman trading off on piano, Ron Carter on bass, and Frank Butler on drums. Now, the song is real cool. I Fall in Love Too Easily, written by composer Jules Stein and lyricist Sammy Kahn for the 1945 film Anchors Away. And something that Miles caught with his interpretation was just so deep. A lot of people say that is one of their favorite songs ever. Postage Stamp, a little bit later on this year, honoring Miles Davis in conjunction with the U.S. Postal System and the Postal Service in France called La Poste. So be looking forward to that. That's pretty doggone cool. 20-some years after his death, huh? Amazing. So is Darius Scott coming your way next hour, and I'm looking forward to this. This is a long time in coming, this little interview, so hope you'll be happy. We have a lot of music to get to. I want to play this for my friend Katrina Shaw. She is such a wonderful friend, the kind of friend, and this is what you have to keep in mind for the generous spirit that she has. Working a job, having some real challenges in her life, but when my mom passed away a couple of years ago, she made it a point to come with our friend Stephanie from Baltimore to Philadelphia to make sure she was supporting her sister. Just love her so much, and I wanted to play a song for her birthday tomorrow. She's reaching a big age. I'm not going to say, she'll smack me, but this is David Benoit, Katrina's Little Bear from the CD Full Circle on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. You'll love this. Thank you. That today was going to be a little different. Oh, mercy sakes alive. It's good to mix it up, isn't it? If folks remember back in the day with all the great AM stations that we had that were playing a mix of things, and it just made perfect sense that we would hear Stéphane Grappelli right into Ambrosia. Oh, my goodness. From 1980, from the CD 180, excuse me. From the cassette or the LP, Biggest Part of Me, one of the biggest songs that Ambrosia ever did, got together in 1970. And actually, I love this. You know why they decided to name their group Ambrosia? It's because they wanted to make sure that all the shades, the textures, the colors, and the styles of their music got blended. Huh, sounds a little bit like hybrid jazz. So, of course, I'm playing that song because it's a song for one of the birthday people that I had in mind. And that person is the father of my son, Tim Flaherty, a.k.a. Buck, who turns a pivotal age today and I cannot say that age. I don't mind saying it for me this year, but no, so we won't. So Tim and I met in 1982 when Tim auditioned. He's a singer too, and an excellent singer, and a guitar player and a drummer at this club in Southwest Baltimore. So I just was enamored of the fact that he had custody of his little girl. So we had this really, really long and bumpy ride, and now we're really good friends, and T sees his dad every day, and we'll see him after the show today so we can take him out to dinner, but he needed to hear one of those songs that he can do just as well if he's out on a club date. By the way, yes, he's as good as David Pack, even though David Pack is the angel Gabriel, and that's what they sound like in heaven. David Pack, by the way, check this out. Oh, I'm so psyched. He's going to be at Burke's Jazz. He is also going to be on the 31st of March with Mindy Hebert and Jeff Golub at the Crown Plaza in D.C., which is just up the road from us. And he's going to be in the next couple of days at Yoshi's in Oakland, California, with Alan Parsons. Can you stand that? You rockheads that have been listening to Ambrosia and the Alan Parsons Project for years, talk about a great combination. They were just at NAMM in L.A., so they decided to continue their partnership. So David Pack no longer with Ambrosia, and me no longer with Tim, but we wanted to hear a birthday song for him. Stéphane Grappelli, we heard, the French violinist who was born on this day, 126, back in 1908 and died in 97. That was Sweet Lorraine, especially for Joy Hall's grandmother, Lorraine, who was in the hospital for a little bit. She's resting comfortably. We wanted to hear a special sweet song for her. Stéphane, oh my gosh, what a life he had. Formed with Django Reinhardt, the Quintet du Hot Club de France, back in the day, everybody and his mama went there. Hundreds of recordings from Stéphane. Everybody, Duke Ellington, Oscar Peterson, Jean-Luc Ponty, Joe Pass, Yo-Yo Ma, forayed into jazz and pop and classical and rock, and was inducted into the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Hall of Fame in 1997. And I'm not sure, I should have done more homework on that, about whether that was just before he passed or just after, but it was the same year. Yes. And David Benoit, we heard as well, Katrina's Little Bear from Full Circle, and lots of great people on that 2006 CD. Paul Brown, Jeff Lorber, Brian Brumberg on bass, you heard. Huge Groove, Rick Bronze on the CD. Don't forget that David's got a new album, well, relatively speaking, a couple of years, Earth Glow. And he's on tour, and he's also on the air, as far as I know. I think Linda in Malibu can tell us that, on K-Jazz from 6 to 10 still in the morning. I don't know how he does it. God bless him. Hey, this is going to be so cool. We have Darius Scott coming your way in less than 20 minutes or so, and we're going to play a track from him. But I thought, since we were talking about birthdays and since we've already covered a few people, today is also the 68th birthday of Angela Davis. For those of us who remember back in the 60s, our world was absolutely turned upside down by the presence of this formidable being. She was so much a courageous spirit. For her to be an African-American woman who was radical, member of the Black Panther Party, very active in civil rights, an avowed communist who made it a point to be vocal about all of that, and has become Dr. Angela Davis, scholar, author, educator, mentor to so many. Man, this is so cool to be playing this, because this is Angela Davis speaking, along with Diane Reeves singing from the Grammy-nominated album by Terry Lynn Carrington, Mosaic Project. This is called Echo on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Happy birthday, Dr. Davis.
We inhabit our histories, and our histories inhabit us. A prison system with 2.4 million people behind bars is a terrible specter of slavery. And if indeed we can say that slavery was abolished, we cannot deny that it still haunts us.
Echo.
The challenges of the past are challenges of the present and challenges of the future. Poverty, racism, xenophobia, homophobia. Freedom itself is constantly transforming. Echoes of the past and reverberations of the future.
Of our rich land, the unrelenting.
This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Where we now, I think
we're going to do a Darius Scott composition that's also on the CD, on the, was it on Volume 1? Heavy Wing. Written for no one else but Wayne Shorter.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Okay.
Cool.
Oh, let me turn off my cell.
Thank you.
Here one more time for Darius' composition.
There is nothing like when it is done live. I am not kidding you. Just, you know, just thinking about this whole Baltimore, D.C. area and the wealth of talent that we have. Good God Almighty. Darius Scott right there and company. That was Heavy Wayne, and we'll find out the circumstances of that tune because Darius has written to me very specific little stories about each of the tracks that he has sent over the past few days. It's been a real kick. Let's just tell you before we introduce the man of the hour that we heard from John Mayall. I told you the show was going to be a little different. California from the Turning Point back in 1969, ladies and gentlemen, recorded at the Fillmore East on July the 12th. Yeah, so that's especially for my friend Mary Swoyer, who was my best friend in high school, who turns the same age I will turn in October. Mary's birthday is tomorrow. She has no clue I'm doing this, but she deserves to have a song because, let me tell you something, we in high school used to just slobber like little girls over some of these guys. Terry Kirkman and the Association, John Mayall, the Beatles, whatever stage they were in. But John Mayall, you need to know this, is turning 79 this year. He is going to be in the Eastern Maryland area and then at the Birchmere coming up in the next several weeks. And I don't know whether he's going to do a jazz foray or he's delving back in blues, but I think that he's going to have a little bit of an homage to his dad, Murray, who loved jazz back in the UK. And certainly that album was all about that. John Almond on sax there. Gosh, just tripping out. And Angela Davis, along with Diane Reeves on the Terry Lynn Carrington Project, the Mosaic Project before that, and that was a track called Echo. Let me tell you about this man here. I have been trying to get with him so we can have a word with him and his career. Just a very interesting guy, Darius Scott is. My goodness. Was one of those late bloomers. I was so surprised to read about that. Got involved in athletics and certainly was turned on to jazz at an early age. Mom and Dad were really into jazz. And at one point, Darius remembers sitting on a piano bench next to Thelonious Monk. And that little memory must have stuck because years later, he had a sports injury in college, and he decided to take a piano course because, you know, I can't play sports. I'm benched. So there he was. And my God, I have never known anybody more to catch up in his adult life than Darius Scott. And here he is, one of the premier keyboardists in this region and beyond, Darius Scott.
Hey, Trish. How you doing?
See, I was waiting to hear that voice because I love that voice, Darius Scott.
What is it they say? You have a face for radio, right?
No, you were so good because Michael Thomas was on the show with me in a different scenario a few years ago. And remember, it was a little bit tricky to try to get you on the phone that night. But once you just have this formidable presence about you. And then we find out along the way that you were in a few of the Wire TV shows, and you were in Liberty Heights, the movie.
Yes, those were quite a couple of experiences, actually, because I had no idea how they made TV shows and movies and things like that, and what a great opportunity that was to get behind the scenes and see how it all works, and then also get to be in it at the same time. You know, it was a double education. So, yeah, I mean, it's sounds a lot more interesting than it really is. I mean, that was an extra in both cases, but, you know, hey.
Yeah, but you know what? There was something about you that the folks who cast these endeavors thought that you would stand out, and you do. Whether he is going to believe me or not, Darius is one of those people, ladies, I'm just going to say, that when you're walking down the street, you go, oh.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And then for guys, he's a guy's guy. So you've got the best of all worlds.
Yes, I feel very fortunate that I've had the opportunities that I've had to cross paths with a lot of people that I've been able to, you know, develop relationships with, and music has been a huge part of it lately, you know, in the last 15, 20 years especially. So
yeah, it just seems like things are really, really busy. And before we get any further, I know that I have heard Heavy Wayne because I've got Michael Thomas's CDs, but that track that we heard, that was a 12-minute track, that was luscious. Tell me about the circumstances of the track that you just sent me the other day.
Well, that was the live performance that we did, not the one that was on the live CD that Michael recorded, but it was one done some number of months later after we had a chance to let it kind of soak in the stew for a while. And
right.
By the time we recorded this at Twins, which was for the CD release event, celebrating the release of the live recording that we had done, by the time we had played it then, you know, as the group always says, you know, it finally was starting to take on its own character, you know, and everybody was familiar with it. And because when we recorded it live, we had probably played it twice before that. And it's not an easy tune. So, you know, everybody was kind of still trying to feel their way through it. But once we were able to do it at the CD release event, yeah, everybody felt real comfortable. And I was happy with the way it turned out. And so that's why I wanted to give you a chance to listen to that compared with the other ones. So, yeah.
No, I loved it. You know that I've really appreciated Michael and the people that he has surrounded himself with in the past several years. And then, you know, just to hear the camaraderie that he had with you in that telephone interview that we had a few years ago, that was really cool.
He's a special person.
Yes. He really is, and he's the kind of person that once you are in his fold, he is so loyal to you.
I just
love that about him.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's, you know, that's he often points to that, you know, when he introduces the band and talks about the history of the group, you know, that not many groups stay together for a long period of time, whereas
right.
you know this group of guys has been together for 13 years now, as of right now, and you know there are pros and cons of everything. I mean, when you stay together for 13 years, you have to find ways to keep things fresh when you get together. You got to find ways to grow that are different than what's more typical, where people play with everybody else and, you know, come back together. And so that's how it's happened with Mike's group, because each individual plays with a lot of different situations as well as being in his group, and so that's kind of where the growth happens. And then when we get back together, everybody's hopefully got something new to bring to the table, and it enhances the overall effect, you know.
Well, that's a beautiful thing, because that means that you want to come back together. There's a real chemistry that you genuinely enjoy one another's company, let alone the musical companionship that you have.
Oh yeah, that's a huge part of it, because I mean, you know, let's be honest, nobody in that band is world class the way some of the folks in this area really are, you know, like guys like Warren Wolf and Tim Green and all that, but you know, at the same time, everybody appreciates the music and is committed to it and serious about it, and as you said, you know, the chemistry is, I think, what people that like Michael's group, that's what they pick up on immediately, is that, you know, we're not trying to pretend anything, and you can tell that we love what we're doing and that we've worked at it. And so it all comes through in the music. And there's some great tunes. You know, I mean, Michael's a great composer, and a lot of the material we do is his, or arrangements of things that are more standard. And and also fortunately for me, he's allowed me to bring some stuff to the table, some compositions to the table, which has, you know, helped me to grow as well. So yeah, it's been a good experience.
And I am going to disagree with you, Darius, and tell you that I do think that the band, absolutely each one of the members of the band is world-class. Certainly you are, certainly Michael is. You and Michael are the ones I know best, but my God, that work on what I have, I've got four CDs in my possession, and that is choice stuff, and that will stand up against anybody else I know who might be more of an international name.
Yeah, well, you know, in that vein, I know Mike works really hard at getting the band's name out there and promoting the band, and you know, I don't know how he does it. You know, I think he doesn't eat just one bowl of Wheaties every day. He eats three or four of them or something, because you know, I don't know when he finds the time to do it. I mean, I have enough hard of a difficult time finding time to keep all the balls in the air myself, but
right.
But he's, you know, he takes a lot of his cues from Andrew White, who, as it turns out, he was on the CD, the second CD that got the Grammy nomination, and he was also in the audience for that, you know, that live recording he just played. But he is world renowned as, you know, the foremost authority on John Coltrane, has transcribed all his solos, but he's also a real expert at self-promotion and marketing, and Michael has worked directly with him for a while, and that's, you know, he's put his own twist on it, but you know, he always points to Andrew White as, you know, as the man for how to promote yourself and be your own production company, and so it's really helped Michael build his brand, and you know, all the other marketing vernacular people use, but you know, people know that group when we go to play, which is really a nice thing.
Well, and they know you. I mean, I already gave a little blurb about you. I didn't say that you were born in Ithaca and you grew up in Boston, and then you moved to Baltimore somewhere around 1983.
Yes, when I graduated from college.
Wow.
Yeah,
and you had your inspirations. Were you gravitating to Bud Powell and Wynton Kelly and Horace Silver at an early age, or did that inspiration kick in when you were really playing in college?
Oh, well, when I started trying to play in college, I had you know, listened to jazz off and on, but I mean, oddly enough, we didn't really even have a working record player when I was growing up through high school, because I wasn't really, isn't that funny? I mean, I used to listen to radio. I would listen to records at other people's houses. None of my friends were really into jazz, but I mean, I had always liked it and remembered it from early on. There was one record that I used to listen to when I could get the record player working, which was Oscar Brown Jr.'s album Sin and Soul, which, you know,
wow,
I had remembered from when I was a kid. And you know, one of the cuts on there was a composition by Bobby Timmons called That There that Oscar Brown had written lyrics to. Pretty sure it was Oscar Brown that wrote the lyrics. But I used to listen to that. But then once I was in college, you know, I wasn't really hearing that much music, because as I had said in the bio, you know, I focused a whole lot on athletics and I studied mechanical engineering, and it just, you know, the plate was full, and I kind of went where the tide was taking me with all those activities. But from time to time I would hear it. And one summer, actually, when I went out to San Francisco to work and was, you know, staying with my father, who has loved jazz all his life, and he used to take me to clubs out there, I spent the entire summer listening to John Coltrane's My Favorite Things, that whole record, on a cassette tape with earphones on my way to work on the bus every day.
Oh my God!
Isn't that weird? So that was kind of an interesting. It was sort of like a transformative experience, because when I got back to school, that was when I got injured, and then I started trying to play around with the piano and teaching myself ragtime, but listening to jazz. You know, it was a big mixture of a lot of things. Very unorthodox. So, yeah.
Oh, I but isn't that great, though? And I am always fascinated because when you hear musicians talk sometimes, unless you are a musician, you don't understand. I've heard Stanley Jordan talk about this, that, you know, he certainly is a multi-instrumentalist, and he plays two instruments at once, which I can't figure out to save my life. But he gets the inspiration, or got it and continues to get it, on the keyboard because of what he heard on guitar and vice versa. So it just stands to reason that you would say that all of that inspiration that you heard, all that love for Coltrane and My Favorite Things that summer, just gets translated into what you feel in your fingers when you play keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a huge part of it. And then, you know, as I was teaching myself to play, learning Scott Joplin's music, that was very transformative too, because, you know, he was an early American composer, and I read a lot about him and sort of tried to get inside his head, because I had had no real formal musical training. And so, but the interesting thing about that was that as I was teaching myself, I really was not learning the rudiments of the piano. I was more just putting it together like a puzzle, and listening to tapes and trying to imitate it and managing to put it together as a piece of music. But once I learned all that music, I would just sort of memorize it and play it all over and over again. But I never really learned how to play scales and, you know, all the stuff that you're supposed to learn. So when I finally said to myself, I'm going to try to learn how to play the piano and learn to play jazz music, I had to unlearn a whole lot of stuff, and the ragtime was a good foundation for me, but, you know, I literally had to relearn everything in order to start trying to really play and get down to basics, you know. So, and that I'm glad I finally did it, because I'd probably still be playing the same 15 ragtime tunes.
Well, apparently you did some major homework, because you have played with some formidable people through the years, and now, and I'm so glad we have this interview now, because there are some things coming up that need to get mentioned. You still got your Resolution Jazz group cooking, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's, you know, I don't get the opportunity to really book that iteration of my own group very often, but, you know, when I do, I try to make sure that I get really great people to play. You know, I mean, over the years I've been able to play with people like James King and Amy Shook as bass players, Kent Miller. It's hard to even name all the people that I've gotten to play with in a trio situation like that. And
I love Amy.
Drummers like, yeah, she's wonderful. She, you know, she swings. And she's funny and, you know, very generous with her knowledge of the music, and I mean, that's why so many people like playing with her. And you know, and I've played with Eric Kennedy for years before even attempting to try to do trio stuff. And Jeff Reed, you know, he and I had played together with Al Maniscalco for a number of years. Dominic Smith, who plays with Unified Jazz Ensemble, but he's played with everybody. You know, I've had the opportunity to play with him in trio situations. Jim Hanna, who's one of the percussionists for the Rumba Club, the Latin jazz group, is sort of another story in my background, because I learned how to play Montunos because I had to learn them to play in that band to substitute for George Colligan, who had left town and like.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird story. But all those, you know, all those kinds of situations have presented themselves where I've been able to play, you know, have my own group over the years. And, you know, for some number of years at a restaurant in Baltimore called Sasha's, I had the opportunity to have a steady trio engagement there, which enabled me to kind of concentrate on the piano-based drum trio format, which I've always really liked. But it's challenging beyond just being a sideman in a rhythm section and, you know, not necessarily having to cover the melody all the time. And so that opened up a whole lot for me in terms of learning, forcing me to learn melodies that I had never really had to learn before. So, you know, that's been a good opportunity for me to develop even further.
And you're going to be playing out with the group, I think, because honestly, I saw about 3 or 4 dates that are coming up for you, and I didn't know that there were that many. Because one of the events is going to be at the Mansion at Strathmore.
Yes, that's with Michael Thomas's group. It's a really great opportunity for the Michael Thomas Quintet at Strathmore Hall, and that's going to be on March the 8th, and that's at 7:30 at the Mansion at Strathmore. But, you know, closer to today, tomorrow night, I'm playing with Antonio Parker's quintet. It's going to
love
be
that.
Yeah, he's a fireball, that guy.
Yes.
Michael calls him a hot potato. He's something else.
And you're going to be playing at you're playing at a church, which is very cool.
Yeah, it's at Westminster Church in D.C., which is a church that for the last, I believe, either 13 or 15 years has been every Friday night in their season has been doing what they call Jazz Night. And
love it.
You know, they often kind of put their own groups together. Sometimes they'll bring an established group in, you know, kind of like Michael Thomas's group. But it's always really great. And Dick Smith, you know, former Washington Redskin, amazing vocalist. You know, he's sort of the MC, and you know, he'll always end up doing a tune with the band, or another vocalist will come in and get up on the stage. The last time I played there, this gentleman who I believe was a World War II veteran came up and sat in on drums. he was amazing.
Don't you love that when that happens?
Yeah, it's such a family kind of an operation that they have going on down there, because it starts at like 6 o'clock. They got the chafing dishes in the basement with the, you know, the fish and the chicken, and you go down and you get your food and then listen to the music. They have a feed down in the basement so you can watch it if you haven't finished eating before the set starts. And so it's a real nice situation. And that's on 400 I Street Southwest in D.C. So it's really easy to get to, and yeah, it's gonna be fun. Antonio is obviously the leader, and then he's got Kenny Rittenhouse playing trumpet, and then Chaney Thomas is playing bass, and Keith Kilgo playing drums. Keith Kilgo, who is one of the original Blackbirds from D.C., you know, that's out of Howard University.
He's
a real fiery drummer, really tasty. Yeah, just amazing opportunity to play with him. Tomorrow night.
That's tomorrow night. That's coming up soon. And then you have, because you sent to me through the other Facebook site that I have at Hennessy Hybrid Jazz, you sent an invitation to come to something else.
Yeah, I've got a fundraiser that I'm going to be doing, participating in for a school that my daughter, well, she goes to one of several schools in this organization called City Neighbors in Baltimore. And so one of the portions of that organization in the Hamilton campus is having a fundraiser, and it's be my trio, myself, Joe Bussey, who plays with Phil Kneff's group down at the Cat's Eye Pub on Monday nights. He's going to be playing bass, and Jim Hanna is going to be playing drums, and so we're going to do a set. And it's a fundraiser for, you know, for the programs for the school, and it's a great school. The kids who are there all really get opportunities to be really creative, and there's a lot of good learning going on there. So it's a worthwhile cause. That's February 11th, and it's from 7 to 10. At the old Hamilton Middle School on Sefton in Northeast Baltimore.
Excellent, excellent. This is turning out to be a pretty good year for you, Darius, so far. I love
it. Yeah, well, so far, it's feast or famine. You know, I mean, my wife always reminds me when I'm sitting pouting on the couch that I don't have any gigs. She says, "Yeah, don't worry, you'll be getting gigs. Just, you know, shut up, okay?"
And you know,
I have to look at her and say, "Okay, yeah, you're right."
And of course, when it rains, it pours, and it's pouring a little bit right now. But you know, I love so much. You've just described a scenario with the ambiance in the church when these gigs happen, and you never know who's going to show up. Folks who have been playing or have lived elsewhere, who have chosen to live in Baltimore or D.C., and the coming and going of all this tremendous talent back and forth, do you still get excited about the fact that you live in Baltimore? Do you see things popping? Because I do. As far as jazz is concerned, anyway.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely. I mean, Baltimore has always kind of been a strange city that way, because even though there have usually been a few kind of anchor venues where people are playing pretty regularly, it seems like in and around that, venues will kind of emerge and then die away. And, I mean, Baltimore has always struggled since I've been here with that, you know, being able to truly build a scene that sustains itself. But, you know, the mainstays right now, you know, like Caton Castle and Andy.
Yes, they're having a jam tonight, by the way. I got to make mention of that.
Yes, that's right. I guess Tim Green kind of started it, but I think Todd Marcus is going to host it tonight.
Yep.
I haven't been able to get out there yet, although it's only been going on for a week, but I would definitely like to go and see if I can hang. And
me too.
You know, the whole scene, it waxes and wanes. I mean, ever since I started playing, it's been that way. Even before I started playing, I mean, the Jazz Closet. I don't know if you remember the Jazz Closet, but
I remember people talking about it, because remember, I'm a Philly girl, so.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, yeah, that's so you know all about Ortliebs and all, but yeah.
Right.
But
right.
The Jazz Closet was this amazing place, and I would go there and listen to music before I'd ever started really playing, and you'd see, like you say, you'd see people come in and out. You know, I remember there's a story about this bass player who's now passed, but who was on the stage when this young kid walked in wearing horn-rimmed glasses and carrying a trumpet. And he looked over to Gary Bartz and says, "Hey, man, this guy wants to go up and play trumpet. I don't know. Should we let him come on up or what?" And it turns out it was Wynton Marsalis. And,
oh,
and the
my
bass
gosh.
Player didn't recognize him. You
know? Oh,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it was, yeah. Baltimore, you know, it attracts a lot of people, you know, because people that like to hit, they want to go where people are hitting. And, you know, it doesn't matter where it is, you know. So that's how that works. I mean, I know when the wine cellar, when John Lee was doing his wine cellar stuff down on Water Street, you know, Wynton came through there and hung out. You know, he's not too proud to hang with anybody, you know, which is nice, you know.
Oh, definitely. And honestly, I'm feeling that folks are wanting to hear jazz in whichever way they can hear it. People who aren't necessarily involved with the jazz world. Just a couple of weeks ago now, my friend Sheik Ndoye was playing at Blues Alley, and Stevie Wonder heard he was going to play, so he popped in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you can get that kind of attention, and honestly, I expect that to happen if Caton Castle is going to be doing its thing regularly on Thursday night. With the scope of talent that's going to show up there, you can expect anything.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, and I mean, Caton Castle, I love playing there. I haven't managed to figure out a way to get my own, you know, to lead a group in there. But every time I've had an opportunity to play there, I've always really enjoyed it. And you know, it's kind of like the Haven was for so long, where the people who go in there, they love the music, and that's what it's about, you know. I've actually heard of rumor, and I haven't tried to research it any further, but that maybe the Haven was going to open back up again, which would be great.
It sure would. Whether it's in that location or some other location, we really need to have folks that depend on the consistency of a club playing jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting kids to get into it as well, I think that's a huge part. And there's so many just killing players coming out of the schools. It's intimidating to look at the at the field, but at the same time, the more places there are to play, the more it does for the music, and the more people are going to hear it. And that's what you want. So you want it to be the case that if a club opens up, there's going to be people ready to go in there and hit and sound good. And that's why it's a good scene. You know, that so many good musicians are in the area and haven't said to themselves, well, the only place I can be is New York, even though that's obviously the Mecca. But there are a lot of people that say that musicians in this area, you know, Philly, Baltimore, Washington, are on the same par as what's going on in New York. So,
absolutely. Yep. And for however many clubs that there are open in New York, Darius, and for however much work musicians can get there, I've seen a lot of these cats coming in from New York to sit in on what's happening with the scene in Baltimore, because this is the area where folks play in a particular way. It's like playing as if your life depended on it. There's no necessarily pressure. It's just for the love of playing. Nobody's breathing down your shoulder like they may be in New York. Nobody's looking to you like, aren't you on a par with the folks in New York? It's just this great musicianship, and everybody brings something different to the table.
Yeah, playing for the love of the music. I mean, that's something I learned from a lot of the older kind of mentor characters that I've been able to play with over the years. You know, like recently deceased tenor saxophone player Mike Carrick, I mean, I don't know if you'd ever heard of him or heard him, but
I sure have.
He was one of those guys. He really brought a lot of people along. I mean, to a person in this area, and you know, just such a character. But when he got up on his horn, you know, number one, you knew it was him. You could tell it was him. He had found his voice on his horn, but he just blew because he loved playing, you know, and that was what it was about. And you know, guys like Mickey Fields, who is one of those people who never left Baltimore, but you know, you could go to any town and go to a jazz club with people that knew the music, and if you said you were from Baltimore, they'd say, you know Mickey Fields?
Right.
I was that kind of a guy. Yeah, and he was the same way. I got to play with him a bunch of times with Alan Hauser's group at Bertha's back in the early 90s. You know, I got to drive him home a couple times, and, you know, he was like that. He was just very humble but, you know, knew so much music and could play so much music and just played, you know, for the love of playing it, you know, and that was really a great opportunity.
That's the beauty of it too. When a great artist is humble and they're willing to share and be so generous with their gift so that you improve on yours. I love that. That's priceless.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, oddly enough, you know, that you say that, because my one opportunity to play with Gary Bartz was exactly that situation, because it was probably way before I would have been considered ready to do it. But at the same time, the opportunity presented itself, and I wasn't going to say no. And so I showed up, and it was down in D.C. at HR 57, and I was sweating bullets. I didn't know what, you know, I didn't know any of his recent music. But, you know, there was one person on the band that I had a relationship with, James King. And so, you know, at least I could kind of look him in the eye and find out what was going on. And I went up to Gary Bartz and I said, Mr. Bartz, I have to tell you, I'm not sure what tunes you're going to play. You know, I hope you have some charts or something, you know. And he says, don't worry, you'll be fine. And he didn't say anything other than that. And, you know, I don't know if he read my mind or what, but every tune he called, I knew how to play. And I made it through the gig. You know, he never called me again, but that's not the point. It was just like, his whole thing was it was making music, not vibing people off the bandstand or saying, you know, what do you lot too. It's like you have to play with whoever's on the bandstand, and you got to make it sound good. And so that's what he did. He picked tunes that he knew I'd be able to play, and but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't, you know, understating anything. He wasn't, you know, trying to make it look like he was playing Mary Had a Little Lamb because this guy didn't know what he was doing. And it turned out great. You know, it felt really good, and I didn't screw anything up. it was total professional. That's what he was about.
That was really, really cool. I'm glad you told me that story about Gary Bartz because, you know, the higher up you go as far as your notoriety, the more stories you hear.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, and listen, let's play another track from you. We've got Alone Together and Temperance. So tell me which song you want me to play.
Oh, wow. Well, Temperance, which is one of my favorite Wynton Kelly cuts, and you know, I sort of had copped it off the record and tried to work on it for a while and started playing it in trio setting. It's a rhythm change, but it's got kind of a little bit of a gospel twist to it in the A section, which I really liked. And so this cut was recorded at the Tugs at the Tremont with
Oh man, I love that place.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great scene. And so on this cut, I had James King was playing bass and Dominic Smith was playing drums. And
fabulous.
Yeah, it's just a fun tune. So.
Well, good. Well, we'll play it. So hang in with me, and we'll let the folks in the chat room. They have been really busy talking back and forth, which is great. We'll let them hear, and anybody else listening. Temperance by Darius Scott. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy. Oh yeah, yeah. Have to imagine the room that the whole vibe of that place. It was just so cool on Pleasant Street, just a little corner cafe where there was a bar and a handful of tables, and that kind of magic was represented that day. Darius Scott and Temperance doing Wynton Kelly his way. I love that track.
Yeah, it's like one of my favorite tunes that he's done, that he did. Yeah, it's listening to him and Horace Silver and, you know, Cedar Walton and Bobby Timmons and McCoy Tyner, all those classic recordings from that era were definitely such a huge inspiration to get started playing. But also, I listen to those guys all the time just to learn more, you know, because they had so much together, you know. It's always inspiring to hear how those guys were playing it, you know. It's what makes the music interesting to me.
And McCoy is still doing his thing. God bless him, man.
Yes, he is.
He is rolling from coast to coast. I'm telling you, the ideal scenario for me would be if McCoy Tyner and Sonny Rollins ever decided to tour together. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Both,
well, that,
you know,
I'm just so tickled
up.
You had some time to spend, because I know that you got a lot of things on your plate. So even just to have this little chunk of time so you can tell us what's happening in your world and folks can come see you. You've got an active website, don't you, Darius?
Yes, I do. It's at resolution, you know, like New Year's resolution group.com. And, you know, I usually post what I'm about to be doing on that in the calendar section. And, you know, if for some reason I post a video or something, I usually try to link to it there. And, you know, it's got discography and other information. So, yeah, it's a good place to go if you're not on Facebook or something like that. So, yeah, I try to keep that up to date as much as I can.
And thank you for doing that. I've been telling folks, the artists that I've been talking to, it's so important to keep that updated, because sometimes people don't have a business card in their hand. If they do, they don't necessarily make the association. It's nothing personal. It's just that so many people get so much information thrown at them, and all they have is if on a given day they can go to a website and see who you are, what your background is, and where you're going to be playing next.
Yes, absolutely. And it's been a useful tool for a while. And, you know, the way the internet has grown, it's hard to keep up with, you know, because you go from Facebook for a while it was MySpace, and now it's Facebook. But it's been an interesting ride. I mean, the things people are able to do now in terms of getting their music out there are really, really impressive. I mean, my goal is to get a recording together of my own this year, and then it'll be the task of figuring out how to promote it and get it out there. So.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. So.
Well,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Well, keep me posted about that, because I definitely want to know what the next step is, because sometimes with the different people that you and I know who are musicians in this area, it's always, urgent to find out from them, do you want to pursue something musically, or do you want to do this on the side? So
right, in answer to
that question, Darius Scott, what would you say?
Well, I always tell people, you know, who know that I work as a mechanical engineer as well, they say, oh, well, so is music just a hobby? And I say, well, no, music is my profession, and engineering is my hobby. It's just that right now engineering's paying a little bit better. That's all.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. Right.
But yeah, I mean, I focus on music as much or more than I do what I'm doing during the day. And it's as I said before, it's a juggling act. But you know, everybody's got their own juggling act. I mean, I know so many musicians who are, you know, full-time musicians who are juggling teaching students or, you know, working whatever gigs they can find, and that not all of which are necessarily the music they want to be playing. But, you know, that's the price you pay for doing the music that you love that doesn't necessarily have a huge market like jazz does, doesn't. So you really have to put a whole program together for yourself, you know, unless you're in that top echelon of people who are touring all the time and making good money. Everybody else is trying to put a full service program together for themselves to keep the bills paid and keep playing the music they like to play. So, you know, I consider myself lucky that I have a way to do that. You know, I don't have to take absolutely every gig that comes my way, but I try to, you know. So.
Well, you're one of these really blessed people, because that is a very nice scenario that you have, the talents that you have in the other direction. And then it affords you, because of the schedule, I'm assuming, that you can do what you need to do with music and have that flexibility. So, yeah, that's a gift that you have.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, man, because I know so many people, you and I both know them. They're busking, or they're waiting tables, or they've got gigs where they're working overnight. So it's a little challenging for them to get to gigs, because that means that in a given 48-hour period, they're not sleeping.
Yep, which can be really treacherous. You know, you don't want to be doing that for too much. So.
Oh, yeah. Some folks lived to tell that tale. Some folks did not. So, man, I wish you all the best, and please keep me posted. And whatever you do, and especially with this situation coming up with your daughter's school, I'll make sure that I post that on my Facebook as much as I can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
cool.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It's been a nice almost an hour, and it's been a pleasure talking with you, and I hope we'll do it again soon, and I'll definitely let you know.
We will, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to let you go, and then after I let you go, I'm going to play this track that you gave to me, Alone Together, so that way they've got one more Darius Scott track that they have underneath their belts, and then I'll ease the show down the highway.
Okay. Sounds wonderful.
All right, Darius, okay. Thank you. And we'll talk to you soon, and I'll make sure folks know about these gigs. And tomorrow night, once again, tell us where you're going to be.
It's at Westminster Church in Washington, D.C., 400 I Street Southwest, and it's with the Antonio Parker Quintet. Starts at 6 o'clock, and I hope everybody can come. The website there is westminsterdc.org, so it's got all the information there as well.
That's good to know. Bless your heart. We'll talk soon. And hopefully, let's make this a plan. Next Thursday, let's see if we can get together a group of folks to come to Caton Castle for the jam next Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be awesome. Yeah, that'd
okay,
be,
cool.
Be great.
We'll see you there.
Okay. All right, then. Thanks, Trish.
All right, Darius.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye. I love it. I love it. I love it. And let's do it. Let's play one more track, because Mama Bear's got a role to make sure that Tim gets a nice birthday dinner. This is Alone Together from the amazing Darius Scott on piano on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Yoo-hoo!
Thank you.
Been a lovely audience. Thank you so much. Don't forget to tip your waitress on the way out and drive safe. God love y'all. Until next time. Seriously, thank you so much. We've had a lively chat room. Oh my gosh. Norman, Griselda, Matt, Debbie, Linda, Michelle, Fambro in the house. So many wonderful folks and a lot of guests that will go nameless, and that's okay with us. Happy birthday to Tim. Happy birthday, Katrina, and to Mary. Happy birthday, Angela Davis. God rest you. Stefan, bless you for all your French violin work through the years. And we'll see you on Tuesday on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.